When I think back, the first thing I remember seeing him in was Independence Day, where he played the Doctor. And was great. I remember he stole the scenes that he was in for me, honestly. I remember him to this day. He was even in the sequel, they brought him back, because obviously, such a hilarious, important character. And then I was watching some reruns of Night Court, and I remember, oh, that's the guy. That's the guy from Independence Day. And then I realized, oh, he's in Star Trek. Now, I'll admit, I'm not a Trekker. I believe they are called Trekkers, not Trekkies. I think they're very clear about that point. But he played Lieutenant Commander Data on that show. He's also in the movie I'm going to discuss today. So he's all over the map. He's been in a ton of things, done a ton of good work. He's always memorable in what he's in. He's a great actor. I mean, even in the film Phenomenon, which I'm going to discuss today, he's in one scene, filmed it in one day, very memorable as Dr. Bob. I'm not really having a conversation with anyone because it's just me. So welcome to Cigarette Burns. I'm your host, Jed. Cole's not here for this one. It's just me doing the John Travolta classic from 1996, Phenomenon. I'm very excited about this. I've been wanting to cover this film for a while because this film, I don't know, it's not great. It's definitely not bad. Definitely not great. It's something, though. It's interesting. It's thought-provoking. It's stuck with me since the first time I saw it. This was actually one of the first films where I had seen the trailer on Apple QuickTime. That's how long ago that this film, 1996, internet was kind of still new for me at that time, and what happened was Apple would post all these trailers, and that's where you would see a lot of new movie trailers. And they were all these QuickTime moves, and you would try to stream them or download them pretty much at the time. And they were in this little box. And I remember I had the dial-up internet in North Carolina, and 56K modem, I believe, at the time, which pretty advanced for that time. And I remember trying to download this thing for hours, and then it finally fully downloaded, and it's this little box, and I got to watch the trailer, and I was so excited. I was so excited to go watch this film, go to the movies, and Phenomenon since that day has been just one of the movies that I always kind of go back to and watch all the time. Not saying it's the greatest movie ever, not saying it's anything groundbreaking, but I think it's better than people give it credit for. So I'm going to discuss that today. But before I do that, I kind of want to talk about John Travolta's career, because it's a very, very interesting one.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back to that same old place that you laughed about.
He got his start with Welcome Back, Cotta. Now, this is back in 1975, I believe the show started, and he played Vinnie Barbarino. I believe he was the breakout star. That's at least what I've read, what I've heard, what I've been told, all that kind of stuff. That led right on into Saturday Night Fever. Saturday Night Fever followed right up by Grease. He's a huge megastar at this point. He was also in Carrie, had a small role in Carrie. Shout out to that movie, which has telekinesis in it, which Phenomenon does as well. There's a little tease for you. So after Grease and Saturday Night Fever, I mean, he is just a huge star. He's got Urban Cowboy in 1980. He's got Blowout, a very good De Palma film in 1981. Then he's got Stayin' Alive, which is the follow-up to Saturday Night Fever. I believe this was actually directed by Sylvester Stallone. And Sylvester Stallone, to me, is a very good director, but that movie sucks. Like, Staying Alive is one of these kind of cult classic bad films, but it's just not good. I mean, it's ludicrous, all the shit in that movie. And I think that kind of hurt his career, honestly, because it's pretty slim pickings after that. Like, he does a movie in 83, does one in 85, does one in 87. Look Who's Talking, I think, was a big hit. Look Who's Talking 2. But what happens to him is, everyone remembers him from Pulp Fiction, because 1994, that movie came out, no one had seen anything like it, and no one had seen him in quite a while, okay? We're talking like almost 14 years since he had made a film that pretty much anybody saw. And he was so good in Pulp Fiction, I believe he might have gotten nominated for an Academy Award. If he didn't, he was probably pretty close. And great in that film, very memorable, is Vincent Vega. But I want to talk about the fact that John Travolta can only play certain types. And when he plays those types, in my opinion, he's very good. And the main type of that is sensitivity. He can play sensitive guy. He can also play smooth guy. He can't play tough guy. I recently watched Gotti. Cole said I had to watch that film, so I did. And I appreciate him telling me that, because what a fucking train wreck that movie was. And I can go on, that's for a different podcast, to talk about that giant piece of shit. Thank you, fucking Kevin Connolly. But anyway, he cannot play tough. John Gotti was supposed to be a tough, imposing character, originally a hitman. That's how he started off, all that kind of stuff. John Travolta can't play that. But John Travolta in Phenomenon, or John Travolta in Blowout, or John Travolta in his good films, even like Grease, he can play sensitive guy. He can play smooth and caring. That's where he excels, because when I watch him on screen and he's playing those kinds of characters, I feel for him. Like, I'm really emotionally like involved and rooting for him, because he plays up that sensitivity so well. He has those great facial expressions. He can do things with his voice, the way he explains things, the way he plays with pitch. He's just very, very good at that. And that's where, in my opinion, he exceeds, and that's where his best roles are. Now, he's great in Pulp Fiction, don't get me wrong. But to me, he's more smooth guy in that, because even when he's in the scenes with Bruce Willis, well, there's pretty much the one scene in the bar with Bruce Willis, even though he's trying to play tough, I never think that for a second Bruce Willis is in any danger. Never think that that character has any problems. And the Vincent Vega character always has Jules there by his side. And Jules is an imposing character. Samuel L. Jackson can play imposing. Samuel L. Jackson can play anything because he's a phenomenal fucking actor. But he always has that kind of support there. And in the movie like Be Cool or Get Shorty, where he plays the Shylock, he's great in that because he's just smooth guy. You know, he's dancing around with Uma Thurman. He's with Rene Russo. He's quoting old movies. He's just being the smooth Shylock kind of guy. But I never think he's really in danger, but that's only because of his smooth talking ability, not necessarily because I think he's so tough that he's going to beat anyone up who comes at him. So after Pulp Fiction, obviously, he goes on this run. White Man's Burden is a movie that I actually really enjoy. Also, if you want a good tip for how to eat ketchup and french fries with the right amount of salt, White Man's Burden has a great tip in there for you. Like I said, Get Shorty, Broken Arrow, totally underrated film. Love Broken Arrow. We got Phenomenon in 1996, which we're going to talk about today. Michael, I thought was decent. I didn't think Michael was great. Didn't think Michael was bad. It was fine. Decent little film. Andy McDowell, William Hurt. She's So Lovely. Didn't see that one. Then we got Face Off.
Wait, you get looking. You're hot.
It's like looking in a mirror, only not.
I mean, and Face Off is just, everyone remembers Face Off with him and Nick Cage. That's a podcast episode in and of itself, so I don't really want to talk too much about that. But he's got a lot of films since then. Recently, he's been making, well, I guess you'd call it dog shit. So he's got I Am Wrath, he's got Gotti, Speed Kills, Trading Paint, The Poison Rose, The Fanatic, which I believe is directed by Fred Durst. So after American Crime Story, which was kind of his career renaissance in 2016, has not made the greatest of choices. Now, I don't know how much he cares about making those choices or how much he cares about just being Mr. Scientologist and making the movies with his Scientologist buddies. I have no clue. But the man has had a very, very interesting career. Peaks and valleys for sure. He goes on these waves. It feels like people rediscover him every few years or every, you know, once every decade. So I'm sure in the 2020s, he'll make a movie or something and come back into everyone's mind for a little bit. But as long as he plays Mr. Sensitive Guy or Mr. Smooth Guy, he'll be good. But if he tries to play Mr. Tough Guy, Mr. Whatever, it ain't gonna be that great. So that's kind of my rough deep dive on John Travolta. I'm sure Cole and I will talk about him at some point later on. But interesting career. But definitely like Blowout is one that stands out for me because I really enjoyed that film. And I like his work when he's doing those kind of things. And that's why I like his work in the film I'm going to talk about today, which is Phenomenon. So let's roll.
This is great. 37.
Anybody see that? That light? There was a noise. Did you hear it?
The man's inebriated.
I'm not drunk.
Can't sleep. Can you?
What's happening to you, George?
Lately, things have been so clear to me. Just understand quicker.
I just can't stop feeding myself. I read three books a day.
Ever since the sighting.
Roger, it was a damn light.
Imagine doing what others only dream of.
Uma coisa para ficar melhor.
George Malley, you learned the Portuguese language in 20 minutes?
Not all of it.
Experiencing what others can't understand.
And I'm trying to tell you that I think that there's an earthquake coming.
He's nice, isn't he?
Yeah, but he thinks he saw a UFO and he thinks he can predict earthquakes.
And believing what you never thought possible.
Ooh. Let me see you do that one more time.
It's a damn mistake is what it is. It was supposed to happen to someone smart, but it didn't happen to me.
Watching me so closely. I think I scare them.
You're not alone. People have been doing astounding things, things we can't explain.
Can't they just look in his eyes and see who he is? Is it close enough?
You tell me.
It's pretty close.
What do you mean by genius?
He's basically off the chart. I don't think he's testable.
If you think that's something, you should see him move stuff with his brain.
George,
I don't know.
That is the trailer. That is the trailer that I spent hours downloading and then watching in a little window to get hype for this movie. Now, full disclosure, I am an absolute sucker for anything that involves telekinesis or someone becoming like vastly intelligent. I don't know what it is. I'm drawn to those kind of things. I liked Carrie for the telekinesis, loved Good Will Hunting, loved Limitless. Didn't like the TV show, but I liked the movie, even read the book after watching the Limitless film. So things like that, Flowers for Algernon, Charlie, which is an adaptation of that. These kind of things just really fascinate me. The whole idea, like Lucy, that movie with Scarlett Johansson from Luc Besson, which is just really an action film where she becomes intelligent and then turns into, spoiler alert, USB stick at the end, which was very interesting. Still don't think I fully understand that ending. You probably have to be as smart as she was to get what they're trying to say there. But I'm just a sucker for that. And I don't know why. I just think that it's really interesting, the whole idea of they always say, oh, we can use this much percent of our brain and unlocking all that potential, all that bullshit. Maybe it's real. I don't fucking know. But it's fascinating to me. It's kind of science fiction-y and some good stuff. So this film, on the surface, on the trailer, that's what you kind of think is going on because you're not sure. And it takes a little bit for you to realize what's going on in the film. You know, you're probably 3/4 of the way through before you find out what's happening. But this film came out in 1996. It made $105 million domestically. That's quite a lot of money for a movie like this, in my opinion. But it is coming from the great John Turteltaub, who, as we know, he's a pod favorite for making National Treasure, but he made While You Were Sleeping, the Sandy Bullock classic, and he made Cool Runnings. Good director. I like his stuff, honestly. And the direction in this film is fine. It's not stellar. It's not outstanding. It's like this film. It's just mediocre. It's fine. It's good. That's all I really have to say about it. Like, there's no shots that really stand out to me. The script, written by Gerald DePego, who wrote obviously Cole's favorite film, Message in a Bottle, starring Paul Newman, Kevin Costner, and Robin Wright. Might have been Robin Wright Penn at that point. I can't really remember. But he also wrote Angel Eyes. And I actually like Angel Eyes. I ride for that film, okay? Jim Caviezel, Jennifer Lopez. Not a bad movie, really. Gets a bad rap for some reason. I'm not really sure why. I like Angel Eyes. So this film stars John Travolta as George Malley, and you've got Kira Sedgwick playing Lace Penniman, Forest Whitaker as Nate Pope, the great Robert Duvall as Doc. She's got all these good actors, and they come together, and they make a pretty, pretty decent little film. And this film opens, and we've got an opening that is very similar to Good Will Hunting. The thing is, Phenomenon came out before Good Will Hunting. So I'm not sure. Maybe Gus Van Sant was stealing from Turtle Top, like so many great directors have stolen from Turtle Top over the years, because when you want to look at perfection, you look at Turtle Top. Am I right? I take the silence as a yes. Okay, cool. So anyway, Phenomenon came out first. Opening, the theme music, everything's very similar to Good Will Hunting in the beginning. Then the theme kind of kicks up and it's good. From the opening credits, you really don't know what you're in for. But then you meet George, and he's just a happy guy living a simple life in Northern California. And he's really just trying to get rid of this rabbit, live this simple life. He has these chairs at his garage because he's a mechanic, and these chairs are supplied by the Kira Sedgwick character. And you see from the first time we have their interaction that he's in love with her. I mean, he even says it right away. But the thing is what you need to know is that this is a very small town. Everyone knows each other. Everyone knows each other's business. But they're all like all friendly and they all get along. And George honestly has a great life. He's got his best friend, Nate. And Nate is bringing over some solar panel stuff that he has. And Nate is in love with Diana Ross. And the doc has been the doc in town forever. He doesn't have any kids. He's been George's doc since he was a kid. And so you got all this familiarity and everything like that. And, you know, the great thing about this is you kind of feel this warmth when you see these people together, because there's no challenge there. There's no real difficulty. Like, the most difficult thing we see in the beginning is that obviously George is in love with Lace, but Lace doesn't want to have anything to do with him. We're not really sure why. Doesn't seem like there's any past there between those two, but something has happened with her and she doesn't want to have anything to do with George. She wants to kind of live her life with her two kids. But anyway, we end up at George's birthday party. And George's birthday party is at the Elkhorn Bar. Doc gets him a chessboard. And then we get this great line from Robert Duvall, the one and only Robert Duvall, who I might add has so much chemistry in this film with John Travolta. It's amazing. But then again, Robert Duvall has great chemistry with everyone he's in a film with, because Robert Duvall is just great. And his delivery of this line is great.
You have potential, George. I always said George Malley has something extra to offer this world.
I said that the day I circumcised.
He says that every birthday.
it's good stuff. A lot of memorable lines in this film, for me at least. But Travolta, he really does a good job of making George very likable. This is another thing that he does well. Along with the smooth guy, sensitivity guy, he can make his characters very likable. And you really feel genuinely happy for George. And the happy that he appreciates everything. So he runs outside and he's going to say goodbye to Tito, because Tito is leaving the party to go back home. And he looks up in the sky and he's like, 37. 37. You know, he's toasting up there, whoever's up there. And all of a sudden these flashes of light, it kind of looks like these alien ships are kind of in the sky. And then these bright flashes of light that knock George on his ass. And then he wakes up. He stumbles back into the bar. And he's like, did anyone see that? Did anyone see that light? Everyone in the bar at this point is severely inebriated. And they're like, what are you talking about? You know, you've been having too much to drink. What's going on? But no one saw or heard anything. And George is barely concentrating. And let's just say that he was learning chess. And Doc got him a chessboard for his birthday. George all of a sudden beats Doc at chess. In like three moves, he just takes care of him while he's having a conversation. So this sudden intelligence or sudden problem solving, whatever you want to call it, we're still not sure at this point what's going on, allows him to beat Doc, which the way the guys in the bar are saying, oh, Doc, you're letting him beat you because it's his birthday. I didn't let him win anything, you know, and Doc now wants to check him out. He wants to get the revenge on him. And George is like, yeah, you can have your revenge later. You know, so they're like, chalking it up. George is chalking it up. I guess got lucky, whatever the case may be. But George now can't sleep that night. And he'd had a lot to drink, so he probably should have been able to sleep pretty well. But he's reading just the book on Spanish because he's trying to learn Spanish for whatever reason. Tito speaks Spanish at the garage he owns. But his brain is just working on overdrive now. So whatever those flashes of lights were, they awoke his intelligence, his mind, his brain. Everything is kind of on overdrive to the point where he calls Nate. And I always love this exchange here.
What?
I figured it out.
Jesus, George, what are you doing calling me? It's late.
I thought that farmers got up when it was still dark.
That's if you have cows. I don't have any cows, George.
Now look, there's only one explanation of that rabbit.
What?
You see, when I built that fence higher and deeper, he was already in there. See, he was hiding. I fenced him in.
There's only one thing I can do now. Just let him out.
I still don't really know what kind of farmer Nate is. He seems to grow stuff like vegetables, but he's always on his CB radio or sleeping. So he's not the greatest farmer, in my opinion, that I've ever seen. But George figures out why the rabbit is still in there and that when he was digging and all this stuff. Anyway, he figures out the rabbit thing. It shows, we've seen at this point now, that his brain is working on overdrive. He's thinking really fast, all that kind of stuff. He even makes a three-way deal now to get the solar panels that Nate gave him installed on his house through the barter system, basically. What happens is when he's working on a car after making this deal for the solar panels, he's reaching for like a crescent wrench, but he doesn't see where it is. And then all of a sudden we as the viewer see, oh, wow, the crescent wrench just moved. Telekinesis. Again, as I said, Carrie was the first film that Travolta was in with telekinesis. He didn't have the telekinesis in Carrie, Sissy Spacek did, but in this film, he's got it. And I was hooked from that. I was hooked from the trailer. And the first time I saw this film, I was like, oh shit, motherfucker has telekinesis. That's great. That's awesome. I'm in on this movie. I don't really care where they go with it. Telekinesis to me is just like one of the coolest fucking things. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to sound too crazy or weird or whatever, but it just always has fucking fascinated me. The ability to move things with just your mind. Wow, maybe that's possible one day. I don't know. Looper made it seem like it wasn't that big of a deal. Like you could just move quarters and shit like that. But anyway, telekinesis, my opinion, pretty cool. And we see that George is also trying to still court Lace. So he's been buying all her chairs and storing them at his house. She keeps thinking they're selling. He's like, yeah, bring more because they're selling great. She's like, oh, I'll use a different type of wood. I'll do this. I'll do that. And so she's bringing more chairs by and we end up meeting her kids. George is trying to fix her carburetor, all this stuff. And Lace, it's really still not explained why she doesn't like George or why she's just not interested in a relationship in general. We can guess stuff. It gets explained later on. The thing is the way Kira Sedgwick plays this character, I don't really like her. And I don't think that's a fault of Kira Sedgwick. I think it's a fault of how the character was written because she's very hot and cold with George. You can see she's kind of flirting with him a little, but then reels right back and kind of stringing him along in a way. Like, she knows that George is in love with her. She just, I don't know. She just needs to come flat out and say it. But anyway, George now, we're at like 9 days past his incident, the flash of light. We still don't know what it is. He's beating Doc at chess. And he's just consuming books. And he's expanding his mind, obviously, and he does a great job, in my opinion, of just not coming off as arrogant. You're very empathetic towards the George character and what he's going through because he doesn't know why this is happening to him, and he doesn't know, was the flash of light aliens? It's kind of hinted that that could be what it is. What's really going on inside his head, and what is the cause of this suddenness? And honestly, the bigger question that I'm going to raise a couple times in this, because the film raises it, is his life better as a result of this? Because the George we see in the beginning is not a George that is searching for anything. He's a George that's very happy, that likes his life. He'd love to have a relationship with Lace. But other than that, things are going great. He's got a great support group around him in terms of friends, Doc, all these great people. So it's just an interesting question, and it's kind of posed throughout the film a little bit, and you kind of come back to it, and it makes the viewer think, like, yeah, it'd be amazing to obviously have telekinesis and to be insanely intelligent and be able to, you know, consume knowledge like none other. But what comes with that? I mean, we already see that George can't sleep. Seemed like he was sleeping fine before, but now something's a little different. So we end up with what every great film needs, a montage. Great track that goes with this montage. Great song that they play. The soundtrack on this movie is really good. Got some good Clapton tunes, all that kind of stuff. But the montage is of him basically learning about the solar panel stuff, experimenting with photosynthesis, trying to create a new fuel for cars, all these kind of things. And, you know, doing experiments at his house, on Nate's farm, with the pig manure stuff that he's going to use for a car. All this great stuff, but His newfound love of knowledge is kind of causing a strain on his friendships, because he's kind of at a different level than his friends, definitely than Nate. And he says certain things that, you know, they can't keep up with him. And also they're pretty insulting because he kind of lets things just slip out. But what he ends up doing, which I think is one of the flaws in the film, is he cracks a code from a nearby Air Force base. And he even tells Nate, like, it's going to give me something to do. You know, I can't sleep at night. I blah, 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 blah. And Nate's like, look, I mean, this is from an Air Force base, dude. You probably shouldn't be messing with this. And honestly, George, with all his intelligence, really should know that he should not be fucking around with the government. And this is where there's a subplot in this film that I really don't think, upon watching it so many times, it's really not necessary to be there. Because what George does is he has Nate send a coded message that says, don't water the marigolds on Friday, which basically ends up canceling an entire training program. George figured out that the marigolds were this like missile system configuration, all this kind of stuff. Later on in the film, George and Nate get taken in for questioning and all this stuff. I just think they're trying to get to a certain point, and I didn't think they needed to use that as the way to get there. I think they could have naturally let what was going on with George take us there, and this detour of having the government involved, it makes for a couple really good scenes, but I think you could have had those scenes anyway and had that great dialogue in other ways. Anyway, that's my only real gripe with the film is that every time I watch it, it kind of feels like this feels out of place. It doesn't really need to be here. But anyway, George is starting to realize that he has telekinesis, because as he's reading one of the, like, you know, 10 books he reads a day, the pages start to turn with him just like putting his hand near there. You know, maybe it's static electricity, but when you can lift halfway into the book and lift it up just using your mind, he's like, he's freaking out a little bit. He doesn't really know what's going on, but now he's got telekinesis. When he shows Doc the telekinesis, it's great because he's like, whoa, well, let me see that again. Why don't you show me that again? Robert Duvall's character in this film is serious when he needs to be, and very playful overall with the tone. He does a great job. His acting performance, as always, is great. And we see also that George is now, because of that montage, he's growing. He's got this great fertilizer, so he's growing all these plants. He grows these huge tomatoes. Lace is very impressed with his tomatoes, and he wants to give her some, but she runs away. You know, she doesn't want to get close to him. What George ends up doing is he ends up driving over to her house, taking her tomatoes, picks up her kids along the way because they're just playing in a random field, and the son, Al, is definitely wary of George, but George wins him over. They pick some flowers, and Lace decides that, look, I just want a simple, predictable life. Some shit happened to her. Basically, what happened to her is her husband, it sounds like, cheated on her and left them, and so her and her two kids were left on their own, and so she moved to this rural Northern California town where everything could just be, she could control everything. I get the feeling that Lace just wants to control her world and wants everything to be predictable and does not want to be challenged at all. But George is relentless. He's not giving up. And let me tell you something. John Travolta in this movie, rocking the fucking denim. There is denim all over the place. And when he goes over to give Lace flowers and more tomatoes, it is denim on denim on denim. So watch out for that when you watch this film, because interesting style choice. So in the process of George and Lace kind of getting to know each other a little better after he brings her the flowers, he ends up standing on this area. He's like, oh, there's some flowers over there. Let me go pick some more. And he feels that, wow, there's these weird, like, weird feeling I'm getting. It's just this total weird feeling. And he's like, these seem like ULF, ultra low frequency waves. Like, that's a predictor of an earthquake. And so he calls up Berkeley, and he's like, hey, there's going to be an earthquake, all this stuff. So you can see that not only is his intelligence happening and his brain is growing in terms of that and being able to control things with telekinesis, but he's also picking up on different frequencies, and he can pick up on all these other stuff. So his senses, he's almost developed another sense or two, and he can pick up all these things about his environment. So what they're really showing us is that in this world, the mind is capable of so many things. And it's interesting because it's not restricted to just he can consume knowledge. He can actually have certain feelings. He can have the telekinesis. And it's really impacting his whole being and his whole existence. And George is not really the person that we knew in the beginning anymore. I'm not saying he's becoming some evil person or anything like that, but he's not the same person we knew before. We don't see him smile nearly as much as we did in the beginning of the film. He doesn't seem as happy. He seems like things are starting to really weigh down on him. But he does get to have dinner at Lace's house with her kids. And I always love the pork chops or turkey exchange here.
This is good, Lace. I think you're a good cook.
No, I'm not. I only make two things pretty well. Pork chops and turkey.
Which is this?
It's funny, like this film, for all the seriousness it has at times, it always does have a lighter tone throughout and lightens things up with some nice comedic effects that I really enjoy. George goes in for a kiss at the end of the night, does not get that kiss returned by Lace. He heads home. On his drive home, the earthquake hits. So we've got several seeds of the plot now, and we're deep into like the second act, and they've all been planted and they're starting to bloom. So what happens is that Travolta's so believable and he's so at home with his character and he plays to all his strengths that when he gets so excited about this earthquake and everything, you can just see it on his face how happy he is. And it's so believable, and it's just such a good performance by him, really. I truly believe he gives a great performance in this film because he feels very at home with this character, because this character, just a nice guy, sweet, sensitive, exactly what John Travolta needs to be. So Lace drives over with her kids and she sees that George has all the chairs. So that plot point that was planted, that little seed from earlier about him being the one that buys all the chairs and her not knowing, now that comes back to bite him in the ass. She's real pissed. She feels lied to. She doesn't want someone that she can't trust. She's, you know, kind of willing to start opening herself up to him. But with that, like, she feels he betrayed the trust. And George then goes and has Nate send another message. And George is looking more and more disheveled. And this message is, you know, he's playing with the Air Force guys and all that kind of stuff. But George also insults Nate about his personal life because Nate is telling him, hey, look, call Lace, apologize, tell her this, blah, blah, blah. And George is like, "What? Look, you're part of the fucking Diana Ross fan club. You haven't talked to a woman like, what, you talked to two women in the entire year?" Like, just really cuts deep at Nate. George reveals his telekinesis to Nate. And it's just this whole thing where you just see George's life is kind of falling apart. So what some would consider to be a gift, in reality for George, it's not really a gift. It's a burden. And there's really something going on behind the scenes there in his mind with this newfound mental ability that he has that's really vastly changing his personality. And also just, as I said, keeping him up at night, he's not getting any sleep. Because when your mind is racing, he's no longer, like, he was never dumb. I'm not going to say that the George character is dumb, but his mind was never consumed with things that it's consumed with now and trying to solve problems and seeing problems, then trying to come up with all the solutions, and then all these kind of things like going off in a million different directions at once, all that kind of stuff is a burden. And he doesn't have anything to quiet out all that because his mind is just working on overdrive. And we see all this come to a head where this grandfather is sick and he's got a grandson, but no one knows where the grandson is. And the doc is like, okay, does anyone speak Portuguese? Because it's a Portuguese. The grandfather's Portuguese, and so is the grandson, and that's all the family speaks. And Doc calls up and says, Tito, hey, Tito, you got to go and get George, pick up a Portuguese to English dictionary on the way. And George literally is spending 20 minutes, and he pretty much learns the entire Portuguese language. It's like, he doesn't learn all of it. But this just exemplifies like where his mind is operating right now, because he's able to have a conversation with the grandfather in order to find the grandson. But also in the process, George is feeling sick. So you remember how I said he could feel the ultra low frequency waves? He has the telekinesis. He's got these extra senses now. Well, he's also got this like special empathy like power, it seems, where he can feel that the child, the grandson, is sick somewhere, and then he has like a stomach ache, and they're, because George starts collapsing, and they're like, "You okay?" He's like, "It's not me, it's him." And he figures out where he is, and he uses his telekinesis, and everyone is like, "Oh my God, that's insane." So now the legend of George is growing, and people are getting more and more freaked out by him. But he uses the telekinesis to get rid of the wood planks, and they reveal the boy, and they save the boy. It's just very interesting because during this whole time, this professor from Berkeley has come to George's house, and when he comes to George's house, he ends up going with George on the trip to go save the Portuguese grandfather and grandson. So now we see that George's experiments, all that stuff is coming to a head, and it's just kind of interesting because we got all these different threads kind of starting to come together. And after this professor sees everything that George does, he's very excited to talk more with George. He wants George to come to Berkeley. George is like, "Yeah, let's get fucking everyone at Berkeley. I want to get all these different divisions, automotive, all this stuff. That's where I can be. If I can be in that kind of environment, that'll be great because then I can kind of share all my knowledge that I suddenly have and all the problems I feel I've solved." But with all this goodwill and all this good stuff that George has done, his friends and the people of the town, because as I said before, it's a very close-knit, tight group, they don't know that they really understand what's going on with George, and they're a little hesitant and they're a little scared of him, I'd say. So the people at the bar are ganging up on him because they want answers. And his great normal life that George has is slipping away very fast. Lace hasn't forgiven him. She's the only one, though, that actually has a reason to be upset with him. And he says that to her. And she agrees that she will potentially go to Berkeley because he feels that if she goes with him, you know, he's got some kind of sense of normalcy with that. And he's a little, I think, intimidated because this is a man who did not go to college. And all this stuff is so young for him. It's only been like a few weeks that he's had all this new mental ability. So she agrees to go with him. But on the day that he's supposed to go to Berkeley, that's when the FBI comes at him. So they come and they get him and they talk to him and Nate and they question him forever. And they give him an IQ test. And I just love the exchange with George and Dr. Bob right here.
"All right, I'll start the questions and I'll be timing your responses. And we'll be recording. Any questions?"
"What's your first name?"
"My first name is Bob."
"Shoot, Bob."
"Right. Name as many mammals as you can in 60 seconds. Ready? Go."
60 seconds. Well, how would you like that? How about alphabetical? "Aardvark, baboon, caribou, dolphin, eel, hippus, fox, gorilla, hyena, ibex, jackal, kangaroo, lion, marmoset, Newfoundland, ocelot, panda, rat, sloth, tiger, unicorn, varmint, whale, yak, zebra." "Now, varmint is a stretch, so is Newfoundland. That's a dog breed. Unicorn is mythical, eel, hippus is prehistoric, but you aren't being very specific. Now, where are you, Bob?"
"Well, I'll try to be more specific. You ready for the next one?"
"Shoot."
"Answer as quickly as you can. How old is a person born in 1928?
"Man or woman?"
"Why?"
"Specifics, Bob."
"Okay, one more time. How old is a man born in 1928?
"Still alive?"
"If a man is born in 1928 and he's still alive, how old is he?"
"What month?"
"If a man was born October 3rd, 1928, and he's still alive, how old is he?"
"What time?"
10 o'clock p.m.
"Where?"
"Anywhere."
"Well, let's get specific, Bob. I mean, if the guy's still alive, born in California, October 3rd, 1928, 10 p.m., he's 67 years, 9 months, 22 days, 14 hours, and 12 minutes. If he's born in New York, he's 3 hours older now, isn't he?"
"How do you do that? How do you make that pencil move? Is that a trick pencil?
No. I ask it to move. I mean, I could say that I will it, but that'd be more like a command. This is more like a collaboration, a partnership.
Partnership?
Mm-hmm.
With a pencil.
Well, why not? We're all made up of the same stuff, aren't we?
Wood?
Energy, Bob. You know, the little pieces. I want to go home. How the hell can I get home, Bob?
It's good stuff, and Travolta delivers that speech and those lines just so well, and I'm rooting for him. I want George to find some kind of balance here because, you know, as much as the telekinesis and the empathy and the intelligence is amazing, like, he needs to have some kind of balance here or this thing is not sustainable. And so what we end up with is Lace was waiting for George, but he never showed up. And FBI finally releases George, but they don't want him to go to Berkeley. So they go and tell the professor, don't talk to him. So now George is feeling even more closed off and isolated, as if his newfound intelligence and his newfound abilities weren't enough to isolate him from everyone. Now the people that he thinks he might actually have a place with in terms of being able to talk to and share all his ideas, he no longer has that either. So it gets pretty dark here because Travolta, his hair is all over the place and he hasn't shaved and all this stuff is kind of coming to a head and he has a breakdown in the bar after being released from the FBI because he's not got no Berkeley now. He's got no Lace. People don't look at him anymore. And out of anger, he uses telekinesis and he ends up breaking the mirror. And as we did on Teen Wolf, you don't want to use your abilities out of anger because nothing good ever comes from that. You just don't want that to happen. You got to control your abilities. If Phenomenon and Teen Wolf can teach you anything, it's whatever special abilities you have, keep them under control at all times. So George's business is also suffering. He's not doing any automotive repairs. And honestly, Travolta does a great job again. I know I'm harping on this point, but because of his ability to evoke this sensitive emotion and the feeling sorry for him, I just feel so bad for George. And it's really a credit to Travolta's performance because he's honestly someone you want to hang out with. Like that, this character is just a good dude. And we have no idea why his mind is suddenly awakened like this. It actually reminds me a little of this episode. I can't remember the name of the TV show. I wish I could. I actually tried to find it, but I couldn't. Where this janitor is working one night, and all of a sudden he becomes insanely intelligent and starts consuming all this knowledge, reading all these books, knows all these facts, all this stuff. And at the end of the episode, it's revealed that aliens triggered that in him in order to get all the knowledge they could of our planet. So basically, he has all this sudden awakening, all this stuff, and then the aliens come down in the end and they kind of sap his brain of all that knowledge. And so still at this point in the film, you don't know what's going on with George and why this has happened. He even does a little rage gardening, which is an interesting scene where he's like, I'm going to till this fucking soil until the day I die. Fuck this thing. It's kind of crazy, but he gets the point across, and we do see that he finds peace in the rhythm of the wind and the motion of the trees. And that image is played throughout the film several times where that's kind of where he finds his center and things kind of start to get okay. And he has this idea that he wants to go speak at the library fair because they let him check out all the books he wants and he's read a ton of them recently. And because he really wants things to go back to normal and just kind of deal with whatever's going on, he feels he can connect with the people in this way, if he kind of just explains, hey, ask me some questions. I'm not some weird, mysterious figure. I'm just the same old guy. I just happen to be a little smarter. And then we get the scene before the fair where Lace goes over and she basically forgives George. And we see that George is all disheveled because evidently with his newfound brain power, he doesn't have time to comb his hair or shave or kind of take care of himself. And so he needs Lace to do that. And this is Rachel's favorite scene in the movie. It's got a great cover of a Van Morrison song. And Rachel says this rivals the ghost scene with the pottery. I don't know that I quite agree with her on that, but, you know, it is a good scene. George gets his hair cut and he gets a shave by Lace. It's nice. It's a good scene. You see those two connect. and it gives George something to kind of hold on to and something to kind of keep him going, I think, because he's at such a low point now with everything that's going on that I don't know that he really feels like continuing on with this life. And so then we get to the library fair, and the library fair starts okay, but people are getting pushy, and then George collapses because George shows them the telekinesis trick that he does with someone's sunglasses. This one woman wants him to touch her baby. There's all these kind of weird things going on because it starts all right. Like, it starts off where it's a decent little thing, but then everyone gets too pushy. They all come at him and bombard him. He gets knocked over, and we see a flash of light again. And what I like about this scene is that I think it's a really good portrayal of what society does with people that have unique abilities. Because the news is even there for some reason. We don't know why it's getting covered by the news, but it's getting covered by the local news. I guess because George, you know, found the boy and tale of him has been spreading. And so everyone wants to know about him and how he does what he does. But it's really a comment on society and how if anyone is different, we are going to poke and prod and do all those kind of things to them to make them feel as alienated and as isolated as possible. And it does a good job of portraying that because, you know, aside from Lace, Doc, and Nate, George doesn't really have any other friends at this point. And it's pretty sad for him. And what he thinks, he has so much hope that this library fair is going to help him out in that arena. And it just doesn't. And it sucks because we see more flashes of light. And now we find out what this is all about. So it's finally revealed through some more tests that George has a brain tumor. The problem with this brain tumor, or the difference in this brain tumor from any other brain tumor, is it's attached itself to his brain, but it's stimulating activity in all the areas it spreads to. So that's why he's also developing all these abilities as time goes on, and his brain is even going into more overdrive because all these areas of activity that we normally don't have in our brain are lighting up because as this tumor is spreading. So the one thing that is giving him all this power and ability is also the same thing that's killing him. And this is very Flowers for Algernon kind of thing, and Charlie and all those kind of movies where all of this stuff comes at a price. And George does not have a lot of time left. And he knows it. And there's no way out. Like, there's no operating on this tumor. There's nothing you can do. And the emotion, again, played by Travolta very well, and it's exemplified in this exchange with Lace.
No. He didn't say how long.
Days or weeks. They don't know.
I'm so sorry, Lace. I know how you hate surprises.
It's so hard not to love you.
How do you make out?
Terrible.
Hey, would you love me the rest of my life?
No. I'm gonna love you for the rest of mine.
So because George can't survive, like, surgery, they still want to do surgery on him, but they don't want to do surgery on him to save him. They want to do surgery on him so that they can study a live brain and they can see what's going on. It's kind of like an expedition, and he's what they're exploring. And he doesn't want to do it. And I really can't sum it up any better than he can right here.
And if you were to wait and do this operation after I'm done with my brain, what would...
That's what you want, yes. An autopsy, that's all we'll do.
But it wouldn't be as useful.
The study of a living, active brain would tell us volumes.
All right, so if you were to do this operation, wouldn't it most likely kill me or at least shorten my life?
George, I'm asking you to try and see the larger picture. Mm-hmm. To realize what you have to offer to us, the ones you're leaving behind. You could be our greatest teacher, George. I can be your biographer, in a sense. I can present you to the world.
But that's not me. It's just my brain. Do you understand? Look, doctor, you know, I might just have something to say in my last few hours. I just might have something to say.
What you're saying is that I have something to teach, and yet you're willing to end me to study my brain under a microscope. Is that all I'm here for?
What else? You're not a scholar.
I'll tell you what I am, okay? I'll tell you what I think I am. I think I'm what everybody can be.
Everyone with a malignant tentacle.
No. That just helped me get here. Okay? I mean, anybody can get here. I'm the possibility, all right? I mean, I think you've got this desperate grasp on the technology and this grasp on science, and you don't have a hand left to grasp what's important.
George.
If I had to choose between a tumor that got me here and some flash of light from an alien craft, I'd choose the tumor, I would, because it's here, within us. What I'm talking about is the human spirit. That's the challenge. That's the voyage. That's the expedition.
But you know that surgeon wants to do it anyway, and so he basically gets a judge to say that George can't make his decision, he's not in his right mind right now, and all this stuff is affecting it because in the end he just cares about his research, he doesn't care about the person. So this is taking an even darker turn because now we're not sure, like, what the fuck's going to happen? We know George is going to die no matter what because there's no saving him, but how are they going to fucking kill him? Are they going to do live brain surgery? What is going to go on, right? But this is a nice, you know, nice film in the end. And so George breaks out of the hospital. And after he breaks out of the hospital, I got to be honest, it feels a little rushed, the whole ending, because George goes home and Lace is there. And so now he finally has his moment with Lace, and he has his last moment with her kids, and he fixes the car with the kids, and him and Lace finally, you know, make love, all that good stuff. And it's, you know, it's sad, it's bittersweet. And during this time, the FBI comes by, and Lace basically explains, like, what, you know, he wants to die at home. You're going to deprive the man of that. And you know, it's a nice touching scene. Kira Sedgwick does a great job in that scene. But George passes away and he can feel it happening. He can feel himself dying, but he gets to do it on his terms. He gets his final moment with the woman he loves. And it's honestly, it gets to me every time. It's sad because he doesn't deserve this. It happens and he's not an evil person. He's a very, very nice person that this terrible thing happened to. And it opened up all these things. It made his life worse for a little bit. But in the end, he got to live the kind of life he wanted and share his final moments with the woman he loved, which is very poignant and very poetic. But the other thing it did is this wasn't just isolated to him. So he may have been the one who had the brain tumor and it was stimulating all the activity. And he's the one who gained all the intelligence and the abilities. But every single one of those things allowed him to impact the lives of the people around him. Because something I didn't talk about was how when he learned Portuguese, the mother of the little boy that he saved is a housekeeper. And Nate, his best friend, definitely needs a housekeeper, but he also needs companionship. And George thought they would be a good match. And so he recorded some lines in Portuguese, which were basically pickup lines for Nate. Nate didn't realize that. Nate, you know, starts trying to pick up the mom. They end up together because we see a year later at George's birthday party that the mom is pregnant. She's with Nate. We see that Doc is teaching chess to Lace's kid, Al. Lace is now integrated into society. She's not someone who's just keeping to herself. And all these other things happen, and all the other people in the town are, you know, improved. Their lives are improved as a result of George and, I don't want to say his sacrifice because it wasn't his choice, but whatever was going on with him, you know, the brain tumor and the stuff that allowed him to do all these things allowed him to have even more of an impact on their life. Because George was a nice guy. He was great. Everyone in town loved him. But had he passed away in, you know, the normal course of life, he may not have had the impact that he ended up having as a result of having the brain tumor and these extra abilities. So it's an interesting, you know, conversation to have and an interesting point that it brings up, because George ends up dying, but as a result of what caused him to die, he got to enrich the lives of others to an extent that he normally wouldn't have. And so I'm not saying one's right or one's wrong or anything. I just think it's an interesting question to pose. That party is great. That party scene gets to me. George had predicted that the South 40 for Nate, that soil that Nate said was the worst in the fucking county, would grow corn. And George was absolutely right. It did grow corn. And we get the great Clapton song here. I just love it. And that's the ending. And I'll be honest with you. When they show that picture of George for George's birthday party at the end, you know, first drink free, gets me every time. Because it's a good movie. This is not a great film. Doesn't need to win any awards. Doesn't need to go down in history as a revolutionary, a groundbreaking anything. It's just a good movie. It'll put a smile on your face. It's a little long at parts. I really think that the whole thing with the FBI is really not necessary. They could have cut that out. But it doesn't like hurt it. It's just like, it feels a little forced. Overall, it's just a great, great film that's enjoyable to watch and pulls on the heartstrings. It's a feel-good movie, and it plays to Travolta's strength. So I wanted to pick this one to talk about because I think there are qualities that actors have and certain roles that really play up their strength. And for me, Travolta has the strength of, as I've said several times now, I'll say it one last time, apologies to all the listeners out there, sensitivity, smooth guy, kind of getting you to feel sorry for him and really, really selling that emotion. That's the kind of characters he needs to play, and he does really well when he does that, and he does really well in Phenomenon, and he's what makes this movie good and memorable. So yeah, for all those who haven't seen it, definitely should watch it. For those who have, you know, throw it on again. I think it's on Cinemax right now, so you can get it on Cinemax streaming. So that about does it. I've got some recommendations for you. Blowout, great Brian De Palma, John Travolta film. Good Will Hunting, about another person who doesn't become a genius overnight, just is a genius, but also how they deal with society and Ben Affleck and Casey Affleck. I mean, very, very good film. I love Good Will Hunting. Limitless, interesting one where Bradley Cooper takes a pill, NZT, which activates his brain and makes him smart, but just for a period of time. It's kind of like he's doing meth, but the meth side effect is intelligence. So interesting, though. I like the movie. The movie is well done. It's got Robert De Niro in it. It's a good, good film. And another one is a sci-fi film called The Man from Earth. It's Jerome Bixby, and he passed away, but they made this film. You know, I think it was the last screenplay or one of the last screenplays he wrote. They made this film, and it's really good. I don't think a ton of people have seen it, but it's really worth checking out. It's very low budget. It basically all takes place in one room. It's all dialogue, but it's really good. It's about a man who, let's say that someone from the prehistoric era never died. For some reason, he had some kind of mutation that allowed him to reach a certain age and stay that age. Well, that's what that film's about, and it's interesting the questions it poses and the logical discussion that follows. So thanks so much for listening, guys. I really appreciate it. Cole and I will be back with another deep dive episode. You can hit us up on SigBurnsPod on Twitter and Instagram, and you can email us at cigaretteburnspodcast@yahoo.com. We've gotten some great email interaction and all that stuff. We just love all the rates and reviews and all the feedback. We appreciate all of it, guys. So whatever you want to tell us that we can do better or that you enjoy, all that good stuff, just let us know, because we're having a great time doing this and we're going to keep the episodes coming. So thanks so much for listening. And until next time, later, burners. The